Well, do you love to hike? You live in the right place. There are spectacular hikes all over our listening area. Author and lover of wild places, Tim Palmer, explores legendary hikes throughout the mountainous parts of our country in his new book, America's Great Mountain Trails, 100 High Country Hikes of a Lifetime. Tim has been with us on several occasions to talk about his love of wild rivers primarily, but we're going to stick with dry land this hour as we talk hikes that are unforgettable. Tim, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's great to be here, John.
So the first thing I noticed about this book when it arrived in the mail is that it is not like a typical Bill Sullivan hike book. It's not designed to easily slip into a day pack and be consulted on the trail.
No, you'll get into really good shape if you carry my book around with you. It's an interesting marriage of a guidebook and an art book of nature photography.
And your publisher is really known for their art books.
They are. Rizzoli Books in New York is known for art books and great photography books. And so I was totally psyched some years ago to find that they were interested in doing a book just like this one, only about rivers. It came out 2 years ago. It's called America's Great River Journeys. And they loved it. My editor loved it. The publisher loved it. And they had done another book about the Appalachian Trail that sold really well in an age when, quite frankly, books don't sell very well. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of pitched this idea of a book about mountain trails, and they were eager to do it as well. So here we are.
So you're not going to be able to put this in your backpack unless, as Tim mentioned, you want to really get in good shape. And if you plan to hike in Nebraska or central Illinois, you're sort of out of luck because this is all about mountain trails.
We're talking about mountains here, right? Yeah.
And so in your introduction, I thought this was an interesting mind game that you introduced, imagining what this country would look like without mountains.
I actually have a photo of this, not in the book. I didn't want to waste the space in the book, but it's in my slideshow about the book, of a shot at the Mississippi River in Illinois, and it's just totally flat. The entire horizon, you know, is just this little sliver of land. And I posed the question, what would America look like without mountains? It would be a Florida or a Bangladesh for 3,000 miles from the Atlantic to the Pacific. Mountains and their foothills actually cover about 40% of our landscape. I divide the country up into 11 great mountain ranges, from the Appalachians in the east to Alaska and Hawaii, of course, including the Cascades and the Coast Ranges where we are. And I chose a selection of just great mountain hikes in all of those 11 ranges to bring to people as highlights of the possibilities that are out there for exploring this amazing land of ours.
So in my life, I was born a flatlander in the Midwest, but the moment I saw mountains, I saw one of the amazing memories I have of as a young child was coming up out of the mountain and seeing the Grand Tetons for the first time. And I never looked back. I was like, I've got to have mountains in my life. So why are they so alluring to people?
Well, let's just look at the basics here. Mountains shape and form our entire climate and weather patterns. So much is dependent in our country on mountain landscapes because they push the clouds up that precipitate rain and snow when the air temperature hits the dew point. 90% of the water in the West originates in our mountains. Virtually all our communities depend on that water supply. Mountains also contribute the soil in our great valleys. The Central Valley of California is 20,000 feet of sediment washed off the Sierra Nevada and the Coast Ranges that create erosion from the mountains that create the flatlands down below where we farm and where we live. Mountains are the refuge of wildlife. Incredible species dependent on mountains like bighorn sheep and the tiny little pika, which is symbolic of high country, but also mountain species that have been pushed out of the flatlands because they were killed because of reduction of habitat, like our buffalo, elk, even grizzly bears. And now mountains are the refuge for us as well. This is where nature still exists in its purer forms, in its most beautiful forms. Not that there aren't great places to go in the flat country, and that not that there aren't places worth protecting and preserving there, especially our riverfronts. But mountains are really the highlights in so many ways, and really the draw for us in terms of recreation and scenery and escape from all the gears of civilization down below.
So we know that climate change is threatening virtually every ecosystem on the planet. What are the threats unique to mountains that you're seeing?
Well, it's unfortunately a long list, you know, and the book is really not about that, but I do refer to these things. And mountains actually are on the front line of damage from climate change and from so much of what we have done wrong to our landscape. And for example, mining. Much of mining happens in mountain areas because of the mountain formation process. That's where the mineralized soil and rock are. And so we have this thing called mountaintop removal in the Appalachian Mountains, where it's not just strip mines, but they're decapitating entire mountains.
I wanted to ask you, what got you out of the rivers and back into the mountains?
Actually, I went to the mountains first. I grew up in the Appalachian foothills of Pennsylvania, and before I was able to paddle a canoe or row a raft, I was roaming wild in those foothills as a little kid, and nature fascinated me, and the idea of exploration and discovery compelled me to just go further and further from the backyard where I grew up. And then I kind of moved up into the Appalachian Mountains themselves, where I had family relatives, and hiked on bigger mountains. And then I began hitchhiking as a teenager to more distant locations. It was easy to do that back then. And traveled to places like Shenandoah National Park in Virginia, where I was enthralled at the bigger peaks with rocky tops. And then I scored a summer job with the National Park Service at Crater Lake. And I hitchhiked to Oregon, went to work for the Park Service at Crater Lake as a seasonal laborer and carpenter's helper, mm-hmm. and every weekend traveled to other mountains nearby. And actually, the second weekend I was there, I got a ride to Bend, and a man picked me up who was going to climb the South Sister, and he said, "Do you want to come along?" And I said, "Yes." So that was the beginning of my Oregon mountain experience, and I was hooked from the first hike.
And we're talking about a book that is published by an art book publisher, Rizzoli, and it has amazing photographs in it as well of all these hikes, and they're obviously inspiring. I'm already making a list of hikes I want to do from this book. You did all the photography.
I do the photography and the writing, and I just love the marriage of those two professions and those two art forms. You know, the writing gives me a means of telling a story, and the photography gives me a direct means of showing a story and a place. And, you know, I'm just enthralled by doing both, by getting out and looking for that magical scene. And it also, if the photography also makes the journey a little more of a search, a little more of a hunt, because I'm out looking for the most profound and exquisite beauty that nature has to offer. So that gets me out early in the morning and late in the day when the light is beautiful. And because of that, I see things that I wouldn't see otherwise. And I think the two, very, very few people do both. But I find it incredibly enriching to be looking for that beautiful scene while I'm also telling a story about these places and about the adventure and the experience of going there.
Tim Palmer is our guest today on The Exchange. We're talking about his new book, America's Great Mountain Trails, 100 High Country Hikes of a Lifetime. So is it your sense that more people are out hiking now? Or is it, I've noticed when I go hiking that the farther I get from an established road, the more thin the population gets.
Yeah, that is still true, and there are more people out today, but keep in mind our population is doubling about every 60 years. So when you and I remember first hiking, you know, the population was about half of what it is today, so you'd expect there to be double the numbers of people. But this is a very, it's a complex issue. And in a place like Ashland, or the near being near Portland, or the big national parks, visitation and use on trails is definitely up to a point where it's sometimes troublesome. But overall, I'm concerned that the interest and the enthusiasm and the experience of going out into wild nature is being lost, quite frankly, on the new generations. You know, we're so obsessed with technology today, and we're so consumed by constant communication that these things kind of work against the drive and the incentive of direct experience in the real world, which to me is the natural world. And so I think we really need to get the young people out into nature more, not less. And so I have no qualms or sense of guilt about promoting our great natural areas, because the old axiom is really true that we only protect places we love and we only love places we know. And so it's really important to get to know the places, the natural places around us.
We've seen some odd marriages of technology, social media, and hiking. We've had a couple of features in the past year on our program about how people are going out and sort of mapping new trails on Facebook or Instagram, which then kind of creates a problem because sometimes they're not on established trails. So I know that some of the national parks are sort of scratching their heads about how to deal with that. We're talking with Tim Palmer about his new book called America's Great Mountain Trails, 100 High Country Hikes of a Lifetime. And I know that we're going to spend a lot of time talking about hikes in our region. I'm sure there are a lot of people that are going to be interested in that. But let's give the East Coast its due, because that's where you're from. I've never spent much time on the East Coast, but I was going through the section of your book about East Coast hikes. There were some amazing-looking mountain hikes all up and down the East. Can you pick a few to quickly highlight?
Yeah, I'd love to do that. But before we move on to that, John, let me just comment on your earlier statement about the publicizing hikes that are off trail.
And please do, yeah.
That is a problem. And I think about that all the time in what I write, and I apply a filter to what I promote, and I really only want to encourage people to go to places that can accommodate additional use, where there is the kind of infrastructure there in terms of management to deal with all that. And yet, on the other hand, I love for people to go out into the unknown as well. To me, the adventure is the unknown, and even in the writing that I do, I don't tell people what's around every bend in the trail the way a lot of trail guides do. To me, most of the excitement and the thrill is discovering for yourself. So it's a thin line there between encouraging people to go out to places that are just the same old tracks, but really worthwhile doing, and new kind of new unexplored terrain. But I always try to consider whether these natural areas can accommodate more use. And quite frankly, I don't publicize the ones that cannot do that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I deal with that issue.
Great.
But on the East Coast, they're actually bridging these two issues. There's a lot of use in the Eastern Mountains. The Great Smoky Mountains have way more visitation than any national park in the country, including Yosemite and Yellowstone and the Grand Canyon, because there's so many people nearby.
Mm-hmm.
But some really terrific hikes there. Well, let's just start with the easternmost mountain in America, which is Champlain Mountain in Maine in Acadia National Park. If you want to see the sunrise for the first instant in America, go to Champlain Mountain. It comes right up out of the Atlantic Ocean. And to see that sunrise, you want to be at the parking lot before dawn. You want to have a headlamp to climb that mile-and-a-half-long trail. It's not very far. Doesn't take very long. Start out before daylight. Get to the top of that rocky peak on the coast of Maine where you're looking out over the Porcupine Islands in the Atlantic Ocean. When you see those first rays of sun on the eastern horizon, it's just a total thrill, no matter how many times you do it. That's a wonderful hike in the east. The I'm from Pennsylvania originally, and there's great hiking at a place that many people here would not know of called the Yaukagany River, which has fabulous river trails along the waterfront there of a wonderful whitewater river. It's actually the first real mountain trails I knew in my lifetime because my ancestors moved to that place in the year, get this, 1787.
That was a while ago.
We would go back for family visits there, and that was my introduction to mountain hiking. I mentioned the Smoky Mountains before, and these are some of the highest mountains in the east. Really better known, though, for their diversity of plant life. So if you're really into botany and tree species, there are more tree species there than almost anywhere in the world, and more big trees than anywhere else in the east. It's kind of like coming to the Siskiyou Mountains right here in our backyard, where we have these amazing Douglas firs and western red cedars and Port Orford cedars and mountain hemlocks and all of that. The Smoky Mountains are kind of the eastern center of that quality of our mountains as well.
We're talking with Tim Palmer about his new book, America's Great Mountain Trails, 100 High Country Hikes of a Lifetime. You can join the conversation this morning here on the Jefferson Exchange by calling us at 800-838-3760. Send us an email. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. And maybe you have some favorite hikes that you'd like to share or want to talk about hiking in general. So, Tim, I'm going to pull rank and pick some of my faves that are in your book. And the first one, I was so surprised, actually, to find this in here. Which is Vitavu Rocks, which is in Wyoming between Laramie and Cheyenne.
And you know of it?
I know of it. Not only do I know of it, but it was at Vitavu Rocks that I decided personally that if I was going to live past the age of 21, that I needed to find a different sport than free climbing. So I spent a lot of time at Vitavu Rocks. And like some of the other hikes in your book, it's literally moments off of a major interstate.
That's why I put it in the book. It's one example. I wanted a mix in the book of places, of hikes that are short and long, difficult and easy, close to urban centers and far away. I thought, okay, so a person in the east where, again, most of the people are, they're driving west. What's the first thing they come to? What's a good introduction to the mountains of the west? Where we don't have major problems of acclimatization, which you get when you go to Colorado and you drive straight up to 11,000 feet at Loveland Pass or something like that. You don't have that problem at Vitavu Rocks in Wyoming. It's a tiny little site, but really beautiful. The rock outcrops there are magnificent. The forest is very Rocky Mountain-esque. And so it's a great place within 3 miles of the interstate of pulling off, taking a short walk as an introduction to the mountains of the West. But I'm curious, why did you choose a pastime other than free climbing? I think that free climbing there would get you hooked on free climbing.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of a fraidy cat. So I had to, a few instances of things that you shouldn't do when you're a teenager that I did. And, it's a long story. But anyway, Vitavu Rocks in Wyoming is really near and dear to my heart, as are the Gros Ventre Mountains. I was surprised to find them in your book as well.
The Gros Ventres are this magnificent range that's right next to the Tetons. So, of course, Grand Teton National Park is an American icon. It's right next to Yellowstone.
Yeah, the Middle Teton is in your book as well.
It totally is. And the Middle Teton is kind of a walk-up, scramble-up peak, yet with spectacular views and this awesome amount of exposure. Mm-hmm. And but the Gros Ventre Mountains are right next to it. So you have many of those qualities, but not the crowds of the Tetons. So, of course, I included the Tetons. You have to. If you're writing about mountains in America, and you want to go there, everyone does, everyone should. But the Gros Ventres are right next to it. I actually lived in Jackson Hole for 8 winters and did some magnificent ski trips through the Gros Ventre Mountains and backpack trips as well. And so they're accessible. They're a little easier to hike around in than the Tetons. They're right there. If you want to avoid the crowds of the big national parks, you can go there.
Easier to find a campsite.
easier to find a campsite. Yeah.
Yeah. And another mountain range that a lot of people don't know about that I found in your book that I actually hiked in this summer was the Uinta Mountains, which, like the Siskiyou's, runs east and west.
I know. It's our largest mountain range running east and west, other than in Alaska, where the Brooks Range runs east and west. And it's in Utah. They kind of adjoin the Wasatch Range, which is bigger and runs north and south. The Uinta and the Wasatch are just outside Salt Lake City, half an hour drive, and bam, you're into amazing mountains with a fabulous trail system. And so it's within reach of that big city. Again, it's within reach of the interstate highway, yet within half a mile of the trailheads, you feel like you're in a lost wonderland of Rocky Mountain peaks.
And it's not very well visited.
No, there's a lot of empty country there, and also a lot of off-trail hiking that you can do without creating a lot of damage, to wildflowers and the ecology of the area. You can wander around because the high country is quite accessible there.
High Country Hikes, the subject of this hour's Jefferson Exchange with Tim Palmer. We're talking about his new book, America's Great Mountain Trails. You can join the conversation by calling us at 800-838-3760, or you can send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. Maybe you want to share some of your favorite hikes or ask some questions about hiking. So, Tim, moving a little bit west, another place that's always fascinated me, but I've never hiked, it's on my list, is Great Basin National Park, and you have Wheeler Peak in Nevada on your list. That's a beautiful area, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is. The basin and range is the big desert region between the Rockies and the Sierra Nevada and Cascade Mountains. So it's actually made up of over 100 sub-ranges. They're a result of geological rifting of the continental plate spreading apart, which buckles up these mountain ranges that run largely north and south. One of the highest of these are the Snake Mountains, which Wheeler Peak is a part of. It's the highest peak that's entirely in Nevada. The Cottonwood Peak in the far western end of the state at the border of California is partly in California, partly in Nevada. It's a little higher. But Wheeler is this magnificent peak over 13,000 feet high, an easy trail to the top of it if you're acclimatized to the elevation, which is very important for people like us living near sea level to think about. And another one of the real amazing things about it is that near the base is an incredible bristlecone pine forest. The bristlecone pines are the oldest trees in the world, some of them nearly 5,000 years old, and they look like it too. They're big and fat and very gnarled and windblown, and they grow only in severe sites that are not exposed to fire and bugs and disease or logging. And so there's this bristlecone pine forest kind of right at the base of the peak, so you can hike there, and then you can ramp on up to the top of this magnificent mountain itself.
So that's Wheeler Peak in Nevada, and if you've ever driven on Highway 50, the loneliest highway in America, across Nevada and into Utah, you've gone right through Great Basin National Park. We're talking this morning with Tim Palmer about his new book called America's Great Mountain Trails, 100 High Country Hikes of a Lifetime. There are lots of hikes to talk about, lots of people on the phone, questions about hiking in the region. And so I've got several questions here from people who phoned in that want to know about the best hike in the Rogue Valley, especially for a novice or beginner hike. You have several regional hikes in your book. What would be the best of those for a beginner?
We are amazingly fortunate here where we live. And first, in Oregon overall, we have one of the greatest concentrations of super hiking trails anywhere in the country. Oregon and California are both incredible that way. But right here, both the lower Rogue River Trail and the upper Rogue River Trail, separated, of course, by the I-5 corridor, they're both just magnificent. And the lower Rogue Trail, 35, 40 miles along that river, in and out of the canyons that come down into it, a wonderful trail that's maintained by the Bureau of Land Management and the Forest Service with great camping. And you can hike along the river. You can jump in the river because it's super hot there in the summertime when you want to. You have to watch out for bears. There are a lot of bears in that corridor. But it's relatively easy hiking. It's near sea level. You don't have to acclimatize. It's accessible to paved roads. The upper Rogue River is entirely different, way up in the Cascade Mountains, crowded with our great conifers. And, you know, the trail there goes through these amazing mountains and along that river with these very bizarre volcanic formations. The entire river goes underground.
The lower Rogue River Trail is a really long one. And so if you're a beginner, you may not want to hike the entire 30 plus miles of it, but you could go to Graves Creek and just hike in and out.
You can go in and out at any length you want on both of these trails. And the upper Rogue River has access points every few miles, really. So it's easy to pick. I actually did the whole trip when the weather was quite bad, so I didn't really want to backpack. And I bicycled the shuttle, and I was alone, so I just parked my van, spotted the bike ahead of time. I'd hike about 8 miles, bike back to the van every day. It's an amazing place where you can do that. So those are two great, relatively easy hikes if you bite off easy pieces of them at a time. Before we move on, though, John, let me just touch on two other themes I'd like to cover here before
sure,
we run
yeah.
out of time. One is that, you know, we're talking about walking, basically. And so what's the big deal about walking? But, at once, walking is one of the most simple and yet profound activities that we do. You know, most of us are able to walk. And we've been doing it ever since we were very young. And yet, this is the most fundamental way we get to see the world, too. And there's just an incredible difference between driving around and walking around. And so I really like to promote this as a way of healthy living, of exploration, of communal activity. It's great to hike with friends. It's a great means of adventure, serenity. It's informative. So at once, it's very simple and yet very profound activity. And that's one reason I like to write about it. And another point I'd like to cover here is that in the age of climate change, I don't really think we should just be driving around all over the place all the time. And hiking and backpacking are a great opportunity. We still usually have to drive to get to the hike, but then we don't drive. And so we get to our location, and then the real focus is on human-powered activity and getting out into the real world itself. And to me, that's another one of the just wonderful and redeeming things about hiking in the mountains.
We're talking High Country Hikes with Tim Palmer. His new book is all about that. Beautiful photographs. It was actually published by an art house, Rizzoli. And we're going to take a phone call here. Is John in Veneta. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning, guys. Yeah, I'm an old firefighter and went through my first part of it just doing project crew and then ended up in hail attack. So I got to spend a lot of time looking down and definitely a bunch of time with maps. And one of the things a lot of people don't really touch on, they just overlook, and believe me, I love them all. I fought fire most of the western states. I don't care where it is. I just love it. But it's topography and its relative value of height as opposed to that basic thing, sea level. And I like to point out, and it was a guy from Colorado that woke me up to this before I got all that other experience later. He was amazed with Mount Jefferson. We were carrying slash fuel in, and we were right at the base of it. And this giant, iconic volcano was just not what he's used to. And he grew up in Colorado. Later on, I kind of started putting this together. And then I'd whitewater raft the University Outdoor Program, and there's all these mountain climbers that I would go with. And they would talk about the mountain in the 48 lower, and that's Rainier. Then I started thinking about, well, where's Rainier and Hood go? They go basically got their toe in saltwater level. So when you're thinking about relative height of what it is, in Colorado, for instance, the lowest elevation of Colorado is like 3,600 feet. So it's a kind of a mind trip to get your head around, but it gives you a perspective. Anyway, that's what I wanted to bring up.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Thanks, John. Tim, yeah. Comments on that?
Yeah, you're on track, John, to one of the really fascinating aspects of mountains and of hiking, which is not just the height, but the relative height, the relief. And so, as you say, Colorado, Wyoming, you know, if you're going to climb the Grand Teton, you start at 7,000 feet and you go up to 14. If you're in the Coast Range, just outside Los Angeles, you go from nearly zero, or say 1,000 feet, up to 11,000 feet. It's this incredible amount of relief, or, you know, vertical change. That's roughly the same as climbing Mount Whitney from the little town of Lone Pine, where the trail starts from. So that it's that difference that really, really counts. And right here near us, Humbug Mountain on the coast of Oregon is 1,700 feet high. It's the highest peak rising right out of the ocean on the Oregon coast. On the Big Sur coast of California, Cone Peak is 5,400 feet high, 3.4 miles from the ocean. So you go straight up out of the sea to these peaks that are not nearly as high as the big mountains of Colorado, but the climb up to the top is roughly the same.
Humbug Mountain's a wonderful hike. I've hiked it, I don't know, half a dozen times or more. And as you're driving on Highway 101, you come around a bend and it's like, what's that?
I know.
It's an extraordinary mountain.
Yeah. I live within sight of Humbug Mountain. I live in Port Orford. You know, it's the mountain of our life. My wife Anne and I go there frequently, and it's just our own little magical place there, rising up out of the Pacific.
Tim Palmer is our guest this morning, talking about his new book called America's Great Mountain Trails, 100 High Country Hikes of a Lifetime. I want to share a comment from a listener. Heidi in Medford sent us an email. She says, it's wonderful that you can enjoy the surrounding beauty during your hikes because you're also a photographer. She says, a few years ago, I have taken up painting and now notice and enjoy so much more of my surroundings, the colors, the shadows at different seasons and times of the day. Thank you for sharing your hobby with us. It's more than a hobby for you, Tim. But so another regional hike that comes to mind, that like Humbug Mountain, of course, Humbug Mountain, you can look down and see Highway 101 from parts of the trail, is Castle Crags, which is right off of Interstate 5, an extraordinary place.
Right. That's the reason I included it. It's one of those accessible places that's still very exposed. You know, you'd think you were way back in the mountains somewhere, these big faces of granite. And it also shows the bridge between the Sierra Nevada and the Cascade and Coast Ranges. And I really like making these kinds of connections. We actually live within the largest block of mountain mass on the continent right here where we are. Where we are, the Coast Range merges with the Siskiyou and Klamath Ranges, which adjoin the Cascades, and to the south, the Sierra Nevada. And that accumulation of mountain mass exists nowhere else really in the continent. You think of the Rocky Mountains as the biggest range because they're the longest, but it's really many sub-ranges separated by valleys, some of which are very wide and with great distances in between. But here, we have these different big mountain masses joining together, and Castle Crags is kind of right there in the hub of it all, which is one reason I included that.
Tim Palmer is our guest today. If you want to talk hiking, maybe your favorite hikes or hikes you'd like to do, call us at 800-838-3760 or send us an email. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Now, you mentioned your first introduction to Oregon was when you got a job at Crater Lake, and you've included a hike there in your book as well.
That's right. Yeah. The whole rim of Crater Lake, of course, is a great hike. You cross the road many times, but it has fabulous views of our deepest and bluest lake in America, and also to distant sites of the Cascades. You can see south to Mount Shasta and north to Mount Thielson and so forth. And Mount Scott is the highest peak above Crater Lake. It's a very easy climb if you're conditioned at all to climbing and elevation. You know, a big major trail that lots of people take, so many, many people can do that. It's another one of these really accessible hikes. Unlike some of the harder ones that I include, like climbing to the summit of the South Sister, which is, you know, for many a real slog because you got to climb thousands of feet and some of it's in loose pumice and the weather can be bad. And it can be big snow fields. You climb up between a couple of glaciers. So it's one of the more difficult yet walkable hikes to a major summit in the Cascade Mountains, where Mount Scott is a really easy one. Let me add here that, and this kind of ties back to that, to John's comment on the vertical elevation difference in our mountains. Mount Hood down to the Columbia River is the only hike in America where you can go from Timberline at Timberline Lodge, the end of the road, down to virtually sea level without any major development or major road crossings and with trail the whole way. And because the Mount Hood trails connect the Pacific Crest Trail and then on down to the Eagle Creek Trail, which delivers you down almost to Bonneville Dam, which is virtually sea level. So right here in Oregon, it's another one of these incredible natural features that we have here. You can go from high country to sea level, and it's great hiking the whole way.
Tim Palmer is our guest this morning, talking hiking, especially hiking in the mountains, and you can join our conversation. We have just a few minutes left of our show, but give us a call at 800-838-3760 or send us an email. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Now, earlier in the hour, we talked about how you know, one of the criteria that you used in your book was to highlight hikes where you felt that the local infrastructure was sufficient to handle a lot of people showing up to hike without there being, you know, great environmental impacts. But that said, if you looked at your book, and let's kind of limit it to the West Coast, where, you know, people who are listening to this broadcast can easily get. Is there a hike that's in your book on the West Coast that you really think is not all that well known that you think people should really experience? I keep hearing, for example, wonderful things about the Lost Coast in Northern California. I have hiked a little bit in the Eagle Cap up in the Wallawas, and I find people don't really know much about that. But what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, those are good choices, John. Sure, I wouldn't.
Not trying to put words in your mouth,
Tim. they're also very popular, but the Lost Coast and Sinkione Wilderness combined is our wildest coastal hike on the Pacific, 70 miles of mostly wildness. The southern half of it through redwood forests and deep wooded canyons where you wind in and out of the canyons and out to beaches. And then the northern half of the hike is the Lost Coast where you're basically walking at sea level. Nothing quite like it. Lots of people like to go there. You need a permit from the Bureau of Land Management. But it's just a wonderful place to go. You don't have crowds, but there are people who go there to backpack because it's so fabulous. One of the lesser known hikes that I include here in the Coast Range is Thompson Peak, which is in the Trinity Mountains, what some people call the Trinity Alps of Northern California. And it's a hike that not a lot of people do because it's on a more remote part of the Trinities. It has the only remaining glacier in the coastal ranges south of the Olympic Mountains. It's a little hard to get to it driving, so that weeds out a lot of the crowds. But it's an incredibly wild and beautiful place that, it's a wonderful place to go for kind of an exploratory trip of the Trinity Mountains.
And what's the closest town there so that people can maybe get the geography?
Well, Weaverville to the south and Soames Bar on the Klamath River on the north is actually the way that I've driven into there.
And any other favorite hikes of yours in the region that you want to highlight before we head out?
Well, let's go to a slightly bigger region, and someone mentioned Jefferson Park. Jefferson Park's very popular, but if you go there early or late in the year, there are very few places in the Cascades that are as remarkably beautiful as the slopes on the north side of Mount Jefferson. And further up to the northern end of the Cascade Range, one of my truly favorite mountains is Mount Baker. It's actually almost to Canada. And it's this Cascade peak that's heavily glaciated as much as only two other peaks in the country, Rainier and Olympus. And I wanted to go there for years. I always got rained or snowed out. I finally got a good weather report, Anne and I went there and had a terrific day hiking to the base of Mount Baker.
Lots of great hikes in the entire country that are highlighted in Tim Palmer's new book, America's Great Mountain Trails, 100 High Country Hikes of a Lifetime. And Tim, thanks for being back with us on the Jefferson Exchange.
It's great to be with you, John. Thank you.